Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary
with Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Morena, Lara, how are you?
Morena, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We've got some big topics to talk about around Putiki Bay and the Dome Valley landfill, but we should start by talking about Winston Peters and what's going on with New Zealand First, because Winston's had a press stand-up in the last week and he says that they're coming back. What should we take from this? Is this something that we should see as a classic bit of Winston Peters grandstanding, or is this a serious regrouping of New Zealand First as a party?
Yeah, this is a tricky thing, and this is a tricky thing for a lot of us who are in that broader political commentary, political science area, because on the one hand, there's like this kind of cliche, this old idiom that you never write off Winston Peters and New Zealand First. But on the other hand, like, what has actually happened over time is his voters have literally died out. Like, his base voter group has gotten smaller. Mm. There are about 2.5, maybe 3% of people that consistently are happy to vote for him. And at the moment, when they're sitting, you know, and when they come to vote in 2023, those that are there and still keen on Winston Peters and have that ideology, that sort of socially conservative, left-leaning economic ideology, and they're sitting there, or standing there in the voting booth, rather, they can vote for National, led by Judith Collins, who has a sort of similar kaupapa, or they can vote for David Seymour and ACT if they're in that kind of more sort of... It's all those voters that are quite oppositional in nature, that are a bit grumpy with the government and don't like the way that things are done, and they don't like left politics. And that's that whole idea of this wokeness kind of thing that he's bringing up, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, those voters there, they've got other options. They've simply got other options. And I think that ultimately we're constantly saying, oh, don't write off Winston Peters, but it's probably starting to get to the point where we can, like, on the balance of probabilities, write him off. That being said, there's still that small chance, and a lot of people, like I always pay attention in particular to Josh Van Veen in this space. He's done a master's in politics, and he used to work for Winston Peters, and he's a member of the party, and he kind of argues that they could take a more positive approach. But again, it's just so tricky for a small party, a minor party, to differentiate themselves from those larger parties, and if they were to take a positive sort of centre-left, like left-leaning centrist approach, that would potentially just be the Labour Party. So I mean, it's just a very tricky thing for them.
Do you think that New Zealand First has any kind of future beyond Winston Peters, or is this a party that is just truly tied to him as a leader?
I think that's a really tricky one, because it is, it's one of those sort of, when we're teaching sort of third year New Zealand politics, you start to talk about those personality parties, and there was sort of Bob Jones in previous generations and his party. But like this New Zealand First one, Same sort of deal, where we can't really separate out Winston Peters. We always talk about Winnie, but we're meaning New Zealand First or New Zealand, you know, and it's hard to separate those two things out. I think ultimately people talk about someone like Shane Jones taking over, or Ron Mark, or Tracy Martin, but of course I think Ron Mark and Tracy Martin have moved on. Shane Jones is there and very supportive. He and his partner organised the conference and are quite involved still. So I think that he would be the person that would take over. And then it just becomes a matter of whether he can actually gain a foothold, because they do have to win that seat. And it's been quite clear that both Labour and National are unwilling to cut them a deal, or they have to get that 5%. And you can't necessarily see that happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they can't do that with Winston Peters, it's kind of tricky to see how they would potentially be able to do that further with Shane Jones.
It'll be an interesting one to watch for sure when we start getting into that kind of electioneering season further down the track. But let's talk a little bit about a couple of I guess, land rights issues that have been happening in and around the motu here in Tamaki Makaurau. They are quite different issues, but I feel like there are some interesting parallels to be drawn here. I'm talking about Putiki Bay on Waiheke Island, where there's a marina, the Kennedy Point Marina, going in, and there are protectors down there trying to stop that from happening, trying to exert their right as kaitiaki to protect the koro there, the little blue penguin, which is down there, and also the water and the bay itself. We've also got the Dome Valley landfill, which has been given the go-ahead too. Both of these are issues that have had really big pushback from mana whenua in the area, and also from Pākehā supporters as well. And both have been things that have gone through a lot of court processes, a lot of, I guess, government levels and local council levels as well. And we've got to this kind of, I guess, standoff for both of these issues. Do you see there are, like, I guess, perhaps bigger, broader conversations about how these these processes do go ahead when we get consent for resources, and the way that perhaps mana whenua and other interested parties are consulted. Is that something that you think we need to be talking about at the moment?
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels there. I'd add to that the Erebus Memorial over around the Rose Gardens in Parnell, which is in near, like I'm a city dweller, so it's sort of my nearest park for my kids, so I'm really conscious of that happening as well. And then all of these different sort of land rights related movements do turn into this really interesting blend of Tauiwi or Pākehā, generally Pākehā environmentalists, and them sort of fighting for an issue and willing to take that legal route as we've seen on Waiheke, like go through the different stages of the courts, and we'll probably see that with the Don Valley now. And them plus sort of mana whenua or Māori groups, but then the other thing in all of this is we have to be really careful that we don't just treat any local iwi or hapu as some kind of business, where like someone at the top or a board has made a decision, therefore that's what everyone's going to agree with, because I think that's a trap that I see kind of in these discussions or in media, that people turn around and they go, oh, we're so surprised that Māori are diverse. It's like, yeah, but like that's not how that decision-making works, right? And we see it in a lot of these situations where, like, actually there is some kind of board that's what's being consulted under resource management policy, and that's what the council has counted as consulting Māori, right?
Yeah.
And then actually, the thing is, for so many people already, we don't really participate in politics, right? So you're then all asking Māori to participate in that extra step of politics, to be participating in hapu or iwi level politics, where they also may have many memberships. It's kind of leading them to have to have that extra burden of participation, and that's particularly tricky because it's like people don't, you know, vote in everyday life. So then why do you expect them to vote in like Runanga elections and kind of keep up to date with what's happening there? So there's a lot of sort of pressures or issues happening there at that level. So then like there's just all of those sorts of things happening. And then we've seen as well on Waiheke that Ngāti Pāua, the people involved, have been on the board, have changed. So we've got that variable happening as well. I think ultimately this clearly needs to lead to some kind of resource management reform.
Yeah.
Labor's signalled that quite heavily, that they would potentially go, you know, that's the direction they're going, and they want to kind of put their stamp on that. But again, I don't necessarily know what the best solution here is, because at any given moment, those entities that need to be consulted with change, that extra burden of participation on Māori, and I'm still not sure what that necessarily looks like at sort of that local government level. I think Māori wards are definitely a good step in that direction, but it does kind of lead to some of the concerns that were raised and things like Te Puapua report, right, is where mana whenua or where Māori groups can exercise some kind of veto or be able to prevent some of this stuff from happening. And I guess it also speaks to those broader sort of tensions between the rights of mana whenua, and some of which do actually want, you know, some people want sustainable development in their rohe, right? So balancing those needs with the needs of this sort of expanding city is quite a tricky challenge, and something that I'm glad that I only study.
Yeah, it is. It's a hugely tricky challenge. I just wanted to ask you as well, before we very quickly talk about census data, is we have seen, particularly at Putiki Bay recently in the last week, really big police presence, some pretty confronting videos as well of police altercations with protectors down there. This is an ongoing conversation we have in Aotearoa with how police and minorities, particularly Māori, interact, and the sort of, I guess, disproportionate use of police presence in often Māori issues. Is this another conversation you think we need to be having, quite like an acute chat about at the moment as a country?
Well, this has been something that's been going on, you know, for very many decades at this point. I think that this is like one of those huge issues where whenever you try to start talking about racism or bias in the police force, a huge group of people will jump up and go, but the police have treated me wonderfully. And you have to kind of do that calm explaining about the bias, and that's a really, again, I've got to say, everything today is a tricky problem. But this is another sort of tricky problem, right? And pernicious, and one that just hasn't gone away. I, again, don't know how to fix the issue of bias in the police force. I know that, like, a two-day workshop on unconscious bias is probably not the thing that's going to solve everything, and that seems to be what a lot of sort of those departments and sort of corporates and stuff are doing at the moment. I think that, again, all of this is just going to lead back to colonisation and constitutional change. I think that all the roads lead back to something along those lines. And this is one of those multiple generational problems. But I think that it's one of those things that we come back to, especially in the environment section, where I've got a student at the moment, a master's student, who's looking at kaitiakitanga and self-determination and sort of how we imagine, you know, a proper partnership. All of this stuff, we don't necessarily have those generations and have that time.
Yeah.
So I think, again, another tricky problem is police bias, but it's just one of those things that we're going to have to solve intergenerationally and with time. But in the meantime, it's horrific.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Well, very briefly before we let you go, Lara, I did just want to get your thoughts on some stuff we've seen come out of Stats NZ, where there was a big, problem with the census data from 2018, particularly with representation of Māori being pretty much negligible. It was bad census data, and they've said it's almost unusable at this point. Mm-hmm. Why does this matter? I just think that that's a basic question that just might be useful there. Why does it matter if census data is helpful or not?
Yeah, so when we start talking about the census, and you see this even in like first year students, they have like no idea. They just think we mean that really boring survey that they're forced to fill out, and they kind of can't connect that to what why it matters or what happens there. I mean, it determines a lot of our evidence of policy making at that national and regional level. It's important for iwi so they know, you know, like where their people are and how they're doing. It's important to determine the number of Māori seats as well. Like we use that data to determine the Māori population, and that's been where a particular issue has been with this last census. And so that's going to be it's fundamentally important to know where people are and what their needs are, and that's kind of one, the census is one of the steps in sort of all of that data. That's one of the steps. And I think, again, this comes back to, and it's similar to sort of Māori participation point that I made before, is that Māori and others, and Pacific participation was way down as well, are busy in their lives. And it's like, I think this is really speaks to that need to rethink of the way that we sort of engage with people and engage with people from groups that have been marginalised and colonised, because they're not going to necessarily going to want to sit there and give you all of their data and they trust the government in the way that a lot of Pākehā are. So, I mean, that's kind of another sort of step that we need there is ways to sort of helpfully increase participation at that level too.
Sounds like the name of the game this morning is constitutional change at a broad level.
Probably. That's my life, really.
Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Dr.